Today I have Mike Kistler. Mike's a program manager on the ASP.NET Core team at Microsoft. Mike, how are you?
Hey, very good, Jesse. How are you?
I am good. I am excited to have you here and to talk about OpenAPI and how it relates to Swagger, which I believe it does. And
yes.
I hope it does.
We'll talk about that.
Okay, good. Where would you like to start?
Well, so I'll just start by saying I've been involved in OpenAPI for many years now, going back to, 2016, I guess, when they were first started working on OpenAPI 3. And OpenAPI 3 is actually the point at which the standard, the specification was renamed from Swagger to OpenAPI.
Okay.
So since 2017, it's actually been called OpenAPI. The term Swagger is still used for the tools that are built by SmartBear, the SmartBear company, to display it and to do other processing with it. So there's Swagger UI, which many people are familiar with, that will display OpenAPI files, give you the chance to interact with them, send requests to a service that is described by OpenAPI, right? But Swagger is now used to describe those tools. It's actually a copyright of SmartBear. So now we say OpenAPI. So you'll see that actually a lot in the documentation now that we're putting out for ASP.NET, where we say we're now generating OpenAPI files. This is a feature that we added in .NET 9, and we're doing some more extensions to in .NET 10, where we will create an OpenAPI description of your ASP.NET web API application in OpenAPI, and we'll serve it either on an endpoint. There's also the ability to just generate it right to disk, and then you can make it an artifact of your project that you can version and so forth, just like you would with everything else of your project.
Great. And when you version and so on, is that automatic as you update your API, or is that a manual process?
If you version, you can use, so one of the popular packages for versioning is something called ASP.versioning, and you can use ASP.versioning and you can configure the OpenAPI generation in such a way that it will pick up those versions and it will generate those versions automatically. It's not perfect. There's some better integration that we could do with that. I mean, we discovered kind of late in .NET 9 that there were some there was a little bit of friction in that, but it's possible. And as a matter of fact, we do that in the sort of the showcase app that we use for ASP.NET Core, which is something called eShop. And in eShop, we have a catalog service that serves out the catalog for the shop with a REST API. And we actually have multiple versions of that REST API, a V1 and a V2, and we're using ASP.versioning. And those things generate out to the to their respective API definition files.
Okay, and let me back up. I think I may have missed it. When I initially create the API, what's involved in getting that into an OpenAPI document? Is there an automatic process to that, or do I do that by hand?
It's not completely automatic, but it's almost automatic. So there's a package that you include that's called Microsoft ASP.NET Core OpenAPI. So you include that in your project. And then you have to, you know, it's the standard pattern that is used in ASP.NET, where you add some services into your services collection as you're doing the builder. And then once you've created the app with a build, then you say map OpenAPI. And that map OpenAPI, you give it an endpoint. Actually, if you don't give it an endpoint, it defaults to OpenAPI/v1.json. So you don't have to give it that, but you can give it an endpoint and set that. And then there's lots of other configuration features that you can do as well, either when you add the services to the container or when you say map OpenAPI.
Okay. And the goal here is purely documentation for the client, or is there more to it?
Well, it's documentation for the client. It's documentation for users, but there are other things. I mean, OpenAPI as a format has spawned a whole bunch of tooling that you can use for various purposes. So it's generating documentation, it's generating client libraries. There's tooling that will generate mock servers so that you can actually test against a mock server to make sure that you've got your application set up correctly. You can generate tests against your server. And actually that's getting even easier now with all the AI features that are coming online now. You can take your OpenAPI definition, give it to an LLM, and tell the LLM, please generate me a set of tests that will test all of the endpoints of my API, and it will generate you tests. Now, of course, you know, depending upon the LLM and the way you structure the prompt, it'll be, you know, better or worse. But that's starting to become a real mainstream use case for OpenAPI documents as well.
Just thrilled me no end of having it build all of this test. Right now, when I have a API, I'm going to Copilot and saying generate unit tests for this class. Mm-hmm. Is what you're describing a replacement for that? Something better than that?
Well,
or something alongside that?
What is it that you're passing to Copilot to say generate tests for this? Is it just your project? It's your application?
I just put my cursor on the class.
Yeah, okay. So I think what you would do is with OpenAPI is equivalent to that, but maybe a little bit better. And I say a little bit better because when you put your cursor on the class, you're showing it actually the implementation. Right? As opposed to when you have an OpenAPI document, that OpenAPI document is supposed to describe what the thing should do, not how it did it,
right,
but what it should do. Right? And that's what you really want to be testing. You want to be testing the what rather than the how. And so I think by using the OpenAPI description as the source for generating those tests, you will probably get better tests, more agnostic tests, more, you know, from I guess we used to call them black box tests,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Where you don't see the inside.
Yes. And when would I be able to do that? When does that kind of thing become available within, say, Visual Studio or alongside Visual Studio?
Well, you could do that right now. There's not an automated thing in Visual Studio right now. But the way that you would do that is you would add the OpenAPI generation into your project, as we discussed. You could either capture the output after running the application from that endpoint, or you could set up build time OpenAPI generation, have it generate to a file on disk. And then you would tell Copilot, there's the file, generate me a set of tests.
Let's break that down a little bit and take them one at a time. The first one is I need to get that project in. Is that a NuGet project, or how do I get that into my...
That's a NuGet package. Microsoft, ASP.NET Core, OpenAPI is a NuGet package. Now, it's actually included in the standard templates starting in .NET 9. So if you just start your project from one of the standard templates, it will be there for you automatically. Now, if you're upgrading an older project, or if you've started from someplace else other than one of the standard projects, it's just, you know, your standard .NET, add package, Microsoft, ASP.NET Core, OpenAPI.
Great. And then you said if I want, I can put into my build process that it will generate the file I need. Can you say a little more about that?
Sure. So there's one more package that you need when you want to do that, and that's a Microsoft Extensions package. I don't know exactly why we name these packages the way that we do, but that package is called Microsoft Extensions API Description.Server. And you add that package, and then once you add that package, it will start generating that OpenAPI description into the artifacts of your project. Now, the other thing that I always do when I add that package is there's a build property and I can't remember the name of the build property, but it's in our docs. And you set the build property for the target directory where you want that generated, because by default, it will generate it into your object files, you know, your OBJ directory.
Right.
But I've got my OBJ directory in my gitignore file. I don't want to commit those things to my source control, but I actually want to commit the OpenAPI, the generated OpenAPI, into my source control, because this is going to tell me when I've actually substantially changed my application's behavior API signature, right? If I generate a new OpenAPI and I see a whole bunch of changes in there, then I want to say, okay, did I really intend for those changes to happen? And then if I did, then I want to commit that to source control, and that becomes my new base for my API.
Right, right. Let's go back for a moment. You said you gave a URL, and I just want to make sure I've got that. Okay.
Sorry, I missed it.
You know, I'm paying so much attention to what you're saying, I can't think of what I wanted to ask. So let's talk a little bit, just again, step by step. I have an API. Mm-hmm. I want to do exactly what you just said. I want, mm-hmm. when I build, I want it to generate an OpenAPI document.
Mm-hmm.
That I want to designate where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that to also be incorporated into my version control.
Yep. Yep.
So
you add that package, Microsoft Extensions, API Description Server. Once you add that package, actually, that's all that ASP.NET Core, the framework, needs in order to know, okay, I'm supposed to be generating OpenAPI.
Okay.
The build property that I can't remember the name of, that's the thing that will tell it where exactly to put that file when it generates it. Okay. And I just generally put it in the root of my project.
And we'll get that address for the show notes so that
people
can find that.
Sounds great. Sounds great. And then once that's there, then, you know, you just add it into your source control and commit it. And from there on, every time you build your project, that will get regenerated, and you'll be able to see if you've actually changed anything in your application that changes the API signature.
That's great. That's great. Because right now what we do is where I work, we use a base Swagger document. And then every time we make a change, we update a second Swagger document and do a compare. But all that goes away if we let source control do that.
Yeah. So one of the great things about OpenAPI is, because it's a standard, there's all these great tools that have built up around it. And there's also associated standards. So in addition to OpenAPI, recently there is a standard released called the Overlay Specification. And overlay specifications are a way of taking an OpenAPI document and then adding things to it, okay? Making changes to it in sort of a very structured way. You can think of it almost like JSON patching an OpenAPI document. It's not that sophisticated, actually. But the nice thing about this is that this gives you a way of actually describing in an overlay document the differences between one OpenAPI document and the next. And so you can actually use overlay documents to apply changes. If you had a base Swagger file, right, a base OpenAPI file, you could create this overlay and you could say, okay, now what I'm going to add to that is these additional things, these endpoints or these schemas, or you can do things as sort of strategic as adding error responses on all of your operations, if that's what you wanted to do, right? You could do that with an overlay document. So overlay documents are very nice. There's also another spec called Arazzo. And Arazzo is a spec that lets you describe flows through your APIs. So you can say, you not only say, this endpoint does this thing, but you can call this sequence of operations in order to achieve this result.
how am I documenting this for OpenAPI? Am I using XML documentation, or how am I doing that?
So when we released this in .NET 9, we didn't quite get in the support for XML docs, but that's now been added in .NET 10. So you can use XML docs and, you know, the standard XML docs for things like summary and remarks and parameters are all now picked up, and those are used when we generate the OpenAPI document. But there are other ways too, and one of the key ways is with system component model has a number of attributes that we pick up. One of them is description. So any place you put a description attribute on, we can pick that up and include that in the OpenAPI. There are all kinds of validation attributes that are in system component model data annotations, I think is the package or the namespace. And those are things like max length and min length and range and regular expression. Those things you can put on your properties of your models, and we'll pick those up as well. And those become elements in the OpenAPI. OpenAPI has similar things, you know, length on a string or max length or min and max.
But let me interrupt you. Those are not constraints, right? They're documentation.
Well, they're documentation in .NET 9. In .NET 10, we are actually adding support into ASP.NET Core minimal APIs in particular that pick up those data attributes and actually perform that validation for you. This is something that was done in controller-based API projects in ASP.NET Core for quite some time, but not in minimal APIs. Maybe I should back up. So ASP.NET Core has two kind of parallel frameworks for building API applications. One is what we call the controller-based, or is often referred to as the MVC framework for building APIs. And in those projects, you have controllers, and you have models, and you have DTOs, and you have things like that, right? Back in .NET 6, there was a new pattern that was introduced called minimal APIs. And the minimal APIs have a structure that's more familiar to people that, say, might write in Python, where you just write an endpoint, write a function, and you decorate it to say, this is the thing that you get control on when you do a get on this particular path. Okay, so minimal APIs are much more free, much more direct. And like I said, people in these other languages, Python, Node, also Node's Express has a similar structure. Okay. Now, minimal APIs, because they were just introduced in .NET 6, have been growing up and adding some of the capabilities that have been available in controllers for a while. And one of the last of these is validation. So in .NET 10, you can use these data annotation attributes on your models. You could have used those on controller-based apps in the past, and they would get validated. Now, starting in .NET 10, they'll also be validated in minimal APIs.
And in both cases, they'll not only be validated, but they'll also be documented.
Correct. Correct. Yep. Yep.
I'm liking this more and more.
Great.
And can you talk a little bit about the AI assistance and how that factors in?
Well, the AI assistance is really enabled by having a well-documented API, right? And so because OpenAPI is the standard, back when I started getting involved, in like I said, in 2016, there were actually a number of different standards for documenting, describing your APIs. There was OpenAPI, but there was also something called API Blueprint. There was also something called RAML, and there were some others as well. Over the years, all of those other ones have fallen away. OpenAPI is really the only one left standing. It's become really the de facto industry standard for documenting HTTP APIs. So now that it's the standard, LLMs have been trained on it, right? LLMs know how to read OpenAPI, and they know the various fields in there. They know what a description is. They know, you know, all these things. And so they can read those OpenAPI documents and do interesting things with them, like generate tests, but not just generate tests. And because it's a structured document, there's also, there's tooling as well that, that knows how to do this. So, so really we're just trying to enable this by putting it into a format that the LLM can easily understand.
And how soon do you expect that we'll be able to reverse that and provide the documentation and have the LLM generate the code?
Well, I think there are some struggles to getting there. And in particular, a lot of what is described in OpenAPI is the sort of interface layer, right? It says, here's an operation. It takes these parameters. They have these types. They have these restrictions, the, you know, these validations and things like that. It will return a body in the response that has these fields, you know, that, but what the meaning of those fields are is almost entirely described in the description field of the operation. And I haven't seen anybody really try yet to build a server, you know, from an OpenAPI document. Those description fields would have to be really well done, which is not to say that you couldn't do it, but they would have to be really well done.
Well, you might be able to do it with the assistance of another AI.
To actually deliver the behavior that is intended for the API.
Right, but if you could write a prompt that would help you write the documentation, that would then in turn create the code.
That would be great. That would be great. And we will probably get there at some point.
But it would put me out of business, but that's
well, it'll put you in the business of writing prompts.
I'll have to show you the book I just got on writing prompts.
Okay.
Clearly the future.
Yes, indeed. What else can I tell you?
What else can you tell me?
I can tell you that there are people now that are using OpenAPI to build things that are called model context protocol servers. I don't know if you've heard about model context protocol. So model context protocol is a new, I'll say, interface that has been developed by one of the AI companies called Anthropic. And basically, it's intended to fill the gap between what an LLM knows and what you want it to do. So with model context protocol, you can provide the LLM in its context with a set of tools. Tools are things that, you know, will take inputs and will produce some output, right?
Let me interrupt you and just define context in that.
So when you use an LLM, typically you'll give it a prompt, but as part of the prompt, you'll give it some additional information. You'll give it some information to work on, and that's typically called the context. Okay. So when you want to ask an LLM a question, you can, in addition to asking it, you know, can you make my travel reservations? You can hand it a set of tools that know how to make travel reservations, that are basically APIs that will contact travel companies and make reservations for you. And you can hand all of that to the LLM. And then the LLM, through Model Context Protocol, can come back and ask to use those tools to make the reservations once you've decided where you want to go. That comes through the user. The user approves those uses of those tools, and then will ask through Model Context Protocol to perform the actions that the LLM has requested.
The trick there, of course, is getting the data that the LLM is going to be trained on.
Well, it's getting data that the LLM is going to use to perform the action that you ask it to perform.
Okay.
Okay. And so tools look a lot like open API operations. They're just things that will perform actions based on a set of parameters that you pass it, and then it will give you a response. And so people have made that step, and they've said, give me an open API description, and I will build you an MCP server that you can use with your LLM application to perform whatever actions that the API actually will perform.
One of the problems we have in the industry is we don't use enough acronyms.
Indeed. So before I came to Microsoft, I worked for IBM. And IBM, we always said, was, you know, the king of the TLAs, the three-letter acronyms.
What I like about TLAs is that TLA is a TLA for TLAs.
Indeed. Yes.
Well, Mike, this has been great and fascinating and scary for those of us who write APIs. And I'm looking forward to .NET 10 and seeing what this is going to be.
There's a lot of great stuff in .NET 10. I think a lot of people will really, you know, we had something that I haven't talked about very much is that, you know, before we put this support into .NET 9, a lot of people used an open source package called Swashbuckle.
Yes.
And Swashbuckle would do much of the same thing that that we're doing now in the box in ASP.NET Core. Swashbuckle was a great package, gave a lot of people a lot of value. The problem with Swashbuckle was it was a community package, basically, that just fell into disrepair. It wasn't being maintained for a while. And so there were problems with it that weren't getting fixed. And people started to say, hey, you know, we need another solution for this. And we had all the basic tools for it. And so we said, okay, this is something that's important enough that we think needs to be built into the framework. And so that's what we did.
Got it. Two questions. As a C# programmer, I just assumed all of this is C#. It is all C#.
Yep.
Okay. And is it essentially support only C# programs?
So I tried to generate an API description with an F# program at one point. And it generated, and it described the API that the program actually had, but not in a very pretty way. Okay. I mean, it had to do things like generate identifiers for things that were very messy, and you know, I think there's name mangling that happens in F# that winds up being exposed in the open API description that isn't very, very becoming. But it does actually work. And I think, you know, if we got people saying they really wanted to use this with F#, I think there are some things that we could do to make that better.
Right. But for now, it's C# centric.
For now, it's C# centric.
And yep. When does .NET 10 hit?
.NET 10, so the .NET release cycle is generally once a year, releases in November. So we're targeting November. I'd be very surprised if that moved, but you know, right now that's the target. We have a set of previews that have been released. As a matter of fact, we're working right now on releasing preview 4. That should come out this week, I hope. And there's a lot of features in the previews already. For example, I mentioned the XML. The generation from XML doc comments, that's in previews. The validation in minimal APIs, that was released actually in preview 3, but got some updates in preview 4. So lots to try out for people who are willing to, you know, put up with a few bugs. And then the final release will come out in November.
Great. Well, this is all very exciting.
Great.
And I can't thank you enough for doing this.
Happy to do it.
As things move along, perhaps when 10 comes out, we could have another conversation.
That would be great. Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate it.